This is a gift. It comes with a price. An Avatar, The Last Airbender fic. Written by Witch of Endor. Read by Dr. Fumbles McStupid. Summary. There is a ghost on the Wani, but the crew have grown used to, even fond of, Prince Zuko. And no matter how many times General Iroh tries to gently explain the boy's predicament, tries to suggest that he might attempt to move on, Prince Zuko can always be found watching the sea. There is a prisoner in the palace. Warnings for canonical character death, UA, non-canonical character death, ghost Zuko and bad guys, sexual abuse of a minor, incest, questioning sanity, momentary suicidal ideation, violence, moments of victim blaming, and shaming language, mostly internal. Please note about the incest and sexual abuse. Warning, Ozai is the abuser, and while this is going to be thought and talked about, it will always be fade to black. I don't want to write that any more than you want to read it. Chapter 1, The Ghost of the Wani. There is a ghost on the Wani. This fact once caused disquiet amongst the crew, but 3 years is a long time to live with a ghost, to learn tricks like never try to touch his skin, and let General Iroh handle him, and to allow terror to fade. The problem with the ghost on the Wani is that he doesn't know he's dead. Prince Zuko turns up regularly to give orders in search of the Avatar, a shadow of the mission he would have been given had he survived the fated Agni Kai. The crew follow, mostly because they had been selected for the mission in the first place, and helping a spirit to return to the spirit world is a more honorable mission than searching endlessly for a fairy tale anyway. They travel to the air temples. At first, General Iroh seems to think that a place like this, natural in its spirituality, will aid Prince Zuko in moving on. It doesn't work. Nothing works. The boy is angry and bitter at his own banishment, even though the banishment orders never had a chance to come to fruition. Every now and then, one of the crew will hear General Iroh try to gently explain the boy's predicament. He speaks in a low, loving tone about death and the importance of moving on. More rarely, someone will slip up and touch the boy skin to skin and pass right through him. Whichever way it happens, Prince Zuko will panic and disappear. But he always returns, staring out at the ocean as if nothing has happened. 3 years is a long time to live with a ghost. 1 year into their fruitless search for the Avatar, 1 year into their fruitless search for Prince Zuko's path to the world to come, Lieutenant G looks at the prince and realizes that he is taller. It's not always easy to notice the growth of children you see every day. It's more disturbing, however, when those children are no longer living. G approaches Iroh when the boy is haggling for the price of their necessities in an Earth Kingdom port. Iroh prefers to keep an eye on him in these moments, lest someone try to shake the prince's bare hand and suffer quite a fright. "Do you ever wonder," G asks, "why he seems to be growing up?" Iroh sighs. "His hair changed too," Iroh adds. "He didn't have a chance to shave it after the Agni Kai, and I think it's longer now." It isn't an answer, so G waits for Iroh to turn the question over in his mind. Finally, Iroh says, "I expect it's because he doesn't realize that he doesn't need to grow up." G tries his hardest not to flinch at Iroh's words. He also tries his hardest not to flinch when Prince Zuko loses his temper and shouts at the vendor. The ghost of the Wani is an angry spirit. 2 years into their fruitless travels, Prince Zuko is caught stealing. Iroh rubs at his forehead, sitting across from his nephew. Tea is cooling in cups before them. Iroh takes a sip, allowing the flavor and the heat to calm him. "Explain," he insists, and then listens. Zuko has never been good with words. He stumbles over them, says things he doesn't mean out of anger, slams up walls when he thinks he might seem weak. This is a difference between Zuko's life and his death. While Zuko in life had never been good with words, he had also been well-mannered and kind. Zuko in death is bitterly afraid of anything that could be read as weakness. Iroh does not blame him for it, the way that Zuko was taken from life. It would make anyone brittle and shuddered. Eventually, the truth is bitten out between excuses. Zuko had seen the governor's theft from the locals, and, already suspicious that he had more information on the Avatar than he was willing to share, his nephew decided to solve two problems with one mask and two swords. Iroh hides a smile behind his jasmine tea. The ghost of the Wani cares deeply for honor. 3 years into their seemingly endless spiritual journey, Prince Zuko looks out to the ocean and sees a great light. They find the Avatar. It isn't the mission the crew had expected to fulfill. Zuko bursts through the outer wall of the village, and he is so engrossed in the search for the Avatar and the possibility of going home that he doesn't quite process the destruction he's laid at the doorstep of the Southern Water Tribe. Zuko faces the Avatar, ready to fight. The Avatar holds his hands up, but he looks concerned about something other than the upcoming combat. He says, slowly lowering his arms. Are you okay? Zuko hesitates. What do you mean, am I okay? He asks. What kind of question is that? Right? The Water Tribe boy agrees from behind Aang. What kind of question is that? You look, the Avatar starts, and Zuko attacks. Later, when the Avatar is on board the Wani, he turns to the first unmasked person he sees. Is he okay? The Avatar asks Iroh. Iroh raises an eyebrow. That is a strange thing to ask of the person who just captured you. The Avatar frowns at where Zuko is barking orders. I just have this feeling that something isn't right, he admits. Iroh hums. The Avatar is whisked away, and Iroh finds himself wondering if their two missions, to find the Avatar and to find Zuko a way to move on, had really been the same mission all along. If anyone would understand Zuko's spiritual malady, after all, it would be the Avatar. They lose the Avatar, but they keep searching. The ghost of the Wani leaves a trail of destruction in his wake. There are a great many rumors about Prince Zuko and the Fire Nation. Some say he is dead. Others say he is banished. There was never a funeral, and there are stories of interactions with the angry Prince of the Wani, so most people believe the latter story. Some believe the story so much that they find themselves locked in competition with a ghost. Iroh has never known whether to despise Zhao or pity him. Zhao attempts to take Zuko's life. He fails, because Zuko has no life to take. Zuko is on board during the explosion, but it hardly matters. He swims to shore, though Iroh imagines he could simply appear there if he understood his own lack of limitations. The moment that Zuko meets Princess Yue, everything changes. The Avatar is right there for the taking, but the princess's eyes meet his, and the princess stands, and it is like Zuko is rooted to the spot. Zuko should be shivering from the cold of the waters he swam through to get here. He should have needed his breath of fire, but he feels nothing. Get help! The waterbender insists, raising her hands, readying herself for battle. I'll protect Aang! Neither the prince nor the princess respond. They both continue to stare. Princess Yue begins to approach him. Get away from him! He's dangerous! He's barely here, Katara, Princess Yue responds. Can't you see that? Zuko frowns at Yue, and then looks down at himself. He feels more solid than usual, not barely here. Princess Yue lifts a hand to Prince Zuko's face. Her skin touches his. Zuko draws in a breath, sure that something is about to happen. But nothing does. What happened to you? She asks. Zuko scowls and pulls away, and Yue's hands fall back to her side. I don't know, he admits. And it feels huge. It feels like he's just revealed too much of himself to this stranger, who might use that information to harm him. But Zuko doesn't even know what he's revealed. Princess Yue only nods. What is happening? The waterbender asks, sounding bewildered and afraid. Come and sit, Princess Yue invites. Zuko finds himself following her to the edge of a pool. It's safe for you here. Do you know about the spirit oasis? She asks, her face and her hands kind. Zuko sits with her and shakes his head, and she begins to tell him the story. The Water Tribe boy joins them. What is happening? He asks. That's what I asked, the waterbender responds, crossing her arms and pouting. He came in here to attack, but now she's just telling him a story? The siblings stand to one side. Zuko can see them in his peripheral vision, but he focuses on Princess Yue, who tells him the story of Tui and La. That's a beautiful story, he says eventually, because he thinks he's supposed to say something. Princess Yue smiles at him. "Look into the waters, Prince Zuko," she says, even though Zuko is sure that he never introduced himself. But how had Zuko known Yue's name? He'd read about the Northern Water Tribe and their princess, but he's sure that he shouldn't have recognized her. He doesn't know her. How does he know her? And he shouldn't trust her. Why does he trust her? Zuko leans over and looks into the water. Zuko's reflection looks back, but it isn't right. "Oh," Zuko says, and he hears his own voice shake on it. It's subtle, the difference in his reflection, but it's there. His hair is unshaven, pulled back into a neat phoenix tail like he used to wear it back in the palace. And his eyes are glassy and unseeing. "Oh, it's okay," Yue insists, pulling him back from the water with her hands on his shoulders. "It's okay, Prince Zuko." Zuko looks down at his own bare hands. He understands, suddenly, how he hasn't been cold, how he's uninjured from Zhao's attack. "This is usually when I fade," he says, because he understands this now, too. "Why am I not fading?" Yue is looking out to the swimming koi fish. "Things work differently in the Spirit Oasis," she says, and then looks back towards the Avatar. The Avatar continues to glow, silently, as he travels the spirit world.
Why are we having story time with Zuko right now?" the Water Tribe peasant interjects.
Zuko closes his eyes. "I'm no threat to you," he explains, even though he could be a threat if he wanted. But there's no want for that anymore. Even if he does capture the Avatar, there is no going home. There is no restoring his honor. "I'm already dead."
"What?" the waterbender asks, quiet and hushed. "What happened?"
Zuko opens his eyes. He still isn't fading, even though he said it out loud. "I died a long time ago," he says. But it isn't an explanation to the Water Tribe children. It's for Princess Yue. Yue reaches out a hand and takes Zuko's. Her skin is warm and soft.
"Me too," Yue responds.
"The Moon Spirit gave me life. Do you think the Sun Spirit?" Zuko shakes his head. "This isn't a blessing, it's a curse." They sit together, children of the sun and moon, and watch the spirit water.
"Aang will know what to do when he wakes up," Yue insists. "We'll help you move on, Prince Zuko."
Zuko squeezes her hand. He doesn't know if he wants to move on. He wants to see his uncle and his sister and his home again. But it has never mattered much what Zuko wants. The waterbender sits on the edge of the water, far enough from them to be non-intrusive. Her brother continues to hover, glaring and confused.
"How did you die?" the waterbender asks.
Zuko doesn't like to think about it. Something in him wants to fade away, desperately, but he's kept in place by the spirit oasis.
"My father," he explains eventually, the words feeling like treason on his tongue.
Zuko knows that it's true, but something in the air around him rejects it. He watches the fish so that he doesn't have to see anyone's face. The waterbender gasps, and it's a quiet sound, but it still feels huge in this peaceful space. After a moment, she adds, "Aang will know what to do, Zuko."
"Are we really?" the Water Tribe boy starts, and then makes a frustrated sound.
He sits down heavily at his sister's side and glares at Zuko.
"I don't like you," he explains. "You've tried to kill us a whole bunch."
"But yeah, Aang will help you die properly."
"Sokka," the girl remands.
"Katara," the boy responds in the same tone, and Zuko's mouth lifts into an almost smile, because it reminds him of how he and Azula were a very long time ago. Now, his only task is to die properly. How is Zuko so bad at everything that he can't even die properly? Azula would probably find that funny, too. The children sit around the spirit water for long minutes. Yue's hand continues to feel warm in Zuko's. It might be the most that he's felt physically in years.
Is that really true?
And then Zhao attacks. The Avatar is still on his spiritual journey, so it's up to the children to defend him from the Fire Nation shoulders. Zuko falls into place against his own people. What does it matter now whose side he should be on in a larger war? The Spirit Oasis needs to be protected. Zuko almost imagines he can feel the moon and ocean spirit calling out to him. Zuko's firebending is not strong. It has never been. His fire comes out in oranges and yellows, not hot enough to do enough damage. He fights anyway. It's almost enough,
up until Zhao changes his target from the children to the spirits. Uncle Iroh arrives, and the Avatar returns, but it's too late. The moon dies, casting the night in full darkness. The ocean spirit possesses the Avatar, and the soldiers disperse. They are alone again in the spirit oasis, but there is no calm here anymore. Uncle Iroh sits with them and says to Yue very carefully, "You have been touched by the moon spirit." Sokka tries to hold her back, and Zuko watches with faint horror as Yue says, "It is my duty." But Zuko also understands duty. He stands beside the princess as she chooses her duty, and he says, "You are very brave, Princess Yue." Princess Yue looks up at Zuko, and her eyes shine blue even when the rest of the world has lost its color. "As are you, Prince Zuko," she says, "and it's time for you to move on." "Nephew?" Uncle Iroh asks, and Zuko looks around to see that his eyes are filled with tears. "It's time, Uncle," Zuko says. "Thank you for accompanying me these years." Uncle Iroh reaches forward and wraps Zuko in a hug. Zuko lets himself be held for a beat, and then pulls back. Prince Zuko squeezes Princess Yue's hand, and they both let go. Yue holds the koi fish, and the white drains from her hair. Zuko walks into the water, down and down and down. Yue ascends, and Zuko descends. The Avatar wakes slowly. They tell him about the battle, about Yue and Zuko. "He went where?" Aang asks, frowning. Katara repeats herself. "No," Aang says, shaking his head. "That can't be right." "He was dead, Aang," Katara says, very soft. "I know it seems strange to know, but he had to let go. Yue helped him let go." "No," Aang says again, louder this time, a threat of panic winding through his voice. "That isn't right. Avatar Roku didn't say that Zuko needs to let go. He said that Zuko needs to fight." Zuko wakes, sudden and sharp. "No," he says, realizing where he is. "No, no, no." Zuko curls into a ball, pulling at the chains that tie him to the bed.